O Lord, you have searched me and known me. You know my sitting down and my rising up. You understand my thought afar off. You comprehend my path and my lying down and are acquainted with all of my ways. But there is not a word on my tongue, but behold, O Lord, you know it all together. You've hedged me behind and before and laid your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is high. I cannot attain it. Where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? If I ascend into heaven, you are there. If I make my bed in Sheol, behold, you are there. If I take the wings of the morning and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, even there your hand shall lead me and your right hand shall hold me. If I say, surely the darkness shall fall on me, even the night shall be light about me. Indeed, the darkness shall not hide from you, but the night shines as the day. The darkness and the light are both alike to you. For you formed my inward parts. You covered me in my mother's womb, and I will praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Marvelous are your works that my soul knows very well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was made in secret and skillfully wrought in the lowest parts of the earth. Your eyes saw my substance being yet unformed, and in your book they are all were written the days fashioned for me, when as yet there were none of them. How precious also are your thoughts to me, O God. How great is the sum of them. If I could count them, they would be in number more than the sand. And when I awake, I am still with you. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me, know my anxieties, and see if there is any wicked way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting. When David wrote this psalm, it was one of those good news, bad news scenarios. The good news is that God has perfect knowledge of man. The bad news is God has perfect knowledge of man. He has reached a startling conclusion concerning the relationship of man and the deity of God. He's everywhere. God is literally everywhere. He knows everything. We can never be hidden from his view. He has known us from the beginning. It is he who has formed and created us. And that God fashioned us and formed us, making us what we are. And he knows all of our necessities and he can supply all of our needs and give us everything that we need in this world. And that's the good news. It also could be the bad news, as we'll talk about maybe in a moment. But what David did is that he pondered the nature of God. And in a great and a powerful testimony, I think, really unfolded the character of who God really is, and especially in comparison to man, of who he is and his place in the scheme of things. And to realize that the conclusion is, man is inferior compared to the omniscience and the omnipotence of God. I mean, there's no really comparison. I mean, you could put a piece of dust on a tabletop and try to compare that to the magnitude of the billions of universes that are in this world. I mean, there's just no real comparison that's there. And the thing about it, when we have a close personal relationship with someone here on the earth, that is still rather limited. I mean, we can have a lot of knowledge of an individual and know them a lot. And I think one of the things that used to sort of astonish me when I was younger is that I would be hearing people who had been married, I thought, forever. And something would be said, and they would look and say, well, I never knew that. And I'm thinking, what are you talking about? How could you not know that? I've since figured that out, but anyway, you know. In a close personal relationship, there's a limitation. There's just so much that you really know and that you still gain that knowledge about it. That's not the case here. The case with God is he does unlimited know everything. Not that you probably wonder about this, but why are we not able to read one another's thoughts, revealing the secrets of the mind? Well, I'll tell you why. God didn't give us that power. He could have. He could have given us that power, and we could have indeed been able to read the thoughts of other men. And the reason is because we know that Jesus could do that. by the power of the Holy Spirit, and he was human, and yet what God gave him was the ability to know the thoughts of people. And so we find, particularly like in Matthew chapter 9 in verse 2, you remember that he's got the man with the paralytic hand, and he's there in the synagogue, and they're saying within themselves, you know, that Jesus has said in verse 2 that the paralytic on the bed, he says, "Son, be of good cheer, your sins are forgiven you." And they're thinking within themselves, this man blasphemes, and it says in verse 4, Jesus knowing the thoughts. So it is possible, but God didn't give it to us, and that's a good thing, because we are limited in our knowledge. David's psalm is actually a positive thing. I think we should say that at the very beginning. This is not a psalm that should be read with fear. This should not be a psalm that we read with bad news. We'll sort of make an application of that maybe later. But this is actually a very, very wonderful and a powerful psalm that he is reflecting upon the knowledge that God has of him and how wonderful that is. And of course, there's a reason that David feels that way, and being able to say that I want God to know all about me and to search me and to know me. He knows how to care for us because he knows everything about us. He knows literally every need that we have. And so this psalm is a powerful declaration of David's acknowledgement of God's knowledge of him, and that by that knowledge, God knows every single thing David needs. And that just thrills David to death. He just thinks that's kind of the neatest thing that there is. Because it begins by showing that the things that he knows about him, all the thing that goes that David says that God knows about him, that God knows his daily activities. He knows everything that's going on here. He says here that you know my sitting up and my sitting down and my rising up. He knows all that. He knows what's in the mind. All the thoughts are there, and that's a wonderful thing to David. And he sees that in verse 3, you comprehend my path and my lying down. You're acquainted with all my ways. You know where I go, what I do. You see where I go. And the presence, the continual presence of God with David is such a comforting thing, is to think that God is always with me. And that no matter where I'm at, as later he will say, even in darkness, wherever he is going, whatever he is doing, God is always there. And that's a wonderful thing. And that every word that comes out of his mouth, God hears it. And he's got a huge recorder. I mean, there's so many gigabytes in his recorder, it's eternal. I mean, there's just vast volumes. And it says that God knows every word that comes out of our mouths. And so that's a wonderful thing. In other words, nothing escapes the Lord what happens in my life. Everything that you did today, God knows about. That's a wonderful thing. Yesterday, same thing. And when tomorrow unfolds, then he'll know all about what's going to happen there. And so that's a comforting thing to David. He is saying, such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It's just, I mean, that is such great news. He knows that all that is in the heart. But then the second thing is that where can he go that God is not there? You know, we've been to a lot of places in this world. People do a lot of traveling, and you think about, wow, you know, God is always there. As a matter of fact, he's not only there, he's been there before you. I saw a map the other day, I think it was one of my science magazines or something like that, is that there's some places on Earth that have really not been mapped very well. It's kind of hard to believe. It kind of shocked me to think, what? There's places in this world that have not really been mapped. And there are some places, like Siberia, like who wants to go to Siberia and draw a map, right? There are places that have not really been truly mapped. And there are probably places that are on the face of this earth, believe it or not, that have never been tramped by the foot of man. But God has been in every one of those places. If you want to get really technical, nobody ever discovered anything. Columbus didn't discover America, besides the fact that the Indians were already here. But God's already been here. And so what David is showing here, beginning in verse 7, is, you know, okay, where can I go? If I go to heaven, you're there, and if I go to the realm of the dead, that's what he means by hell. If you have a version, King James, New King James uses the word hell. It means the place of death, Sheol, the place of the grave. If you were able to, which as far as I know you cannot do, if you go to the Mariana Trench, that is the deepest place on the planet Earth, God is already there. And if you want to go to the top of Mount Chimborazo, in Ecuador. That is the closest place to the moon. You're thinking, wait a minute, what about Mount Everest? No, Mount Everest is actually the highest point. But if you want to get technical to see which part of the world is the closest, it's the one that's in the bubble. You know, the earth is a sphere, and so Ecuador is right over here. I'm sorry, it's right over here. And so if you want to go to the top of the mountain in Ecuador, God's already there. And if you want to be in complete darkness, live on Snow Memorial Highway. I'm going to tell you what, flashlights don't work up there. It's so dark. You walk out the door, it is just total, absolute dark, 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 dark. You're wondering, what has that got, you know, on the list? Well, that's why it was on the list, because it's just dark. God is everywhere present. There is nowhere you have been in your life or that you can be. And, it, you know, if Neil Armstrong, you know what he found when he got to the moon? God's been here, you know. He's there because he's everywhere. And that's what David realizes. And one of the things that I think fascinating about this psalm is that David's knowledge of all this stuff, which is, you know, it may be archaic in our terms of technology that we're able to do, but he understands the habitation and the limitations of man is the fact that there's nowhere that man can go that God is not there, no matter whether it's high, low, or whatever it is. And then the other thing is, God knew more about me before I knew about me, and as you. In the fact that God knew about me before anyone knew. In verse 13, you formed my inward parts. You covered me in my mother's womb. Now, I know that we're excited about sonograms and all of that, and we think that's cool. That's nothing. God's been doing that ever since Adam and Eve had their first child. You thought I was going to say since Adam was a boy, didn't you? When Cain was in the womb of Eve, God was there. He is the one that created that life. And every time that there is a child that is conceived, God is there. Sidebar. No wonder abortion is murder. Okay, well. Because God has made this child. And so David understands that even in the womb, we are fearfully and wonderfully made, and the fact that our frame and our presence, though we may have been clothed in flesh, he is there. And he sees more than man sees, because the Lord is the one who gives us breath. You know, if we just stop sometimes and think about the beauty of our body and how it operates, and the fact that we have breath to breathe, well, God's the one that's making all that happen. God is the one that gives us life. Have you ever thought about the fact that your heart has been beating for every moment since you've been conceived in the womb and it's not stopped? I mean, you know, if you go buy an electric car, you got to go plug the thing in. If you got a new cell phone for Christmas, you got to go plug that in. You got to put gas in I got to get gas in my truck. And bang, 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 bang. Going on. The heart, it just goes on. And I know one day it'll stop. But the fact, why is that? Why God made the heart to do that? And I won't even talk about the operation of the brain, because you'll be laughing so hard that won't even be funny. But you think about your brain. How does that work? All those electrons. I knew it was coming. All those electrons going off. I've got 5 electrons. Anyway. Daniel chapter 5. In the old days, in the Old Testament, they knew a lot more than I suspect that we give them credit for. When Belshazzar, you know, did what he should not have done, had that big feast, and remember the writing on the wall, all that kind of going on. And Daniel comes, I almost said David. You know, Daniel came, and this is what he said to Belshazzar in verse 23 of Daniel 5. And you have lifted yourself up against the Lord of heaven. They have brought the vessels of his house before you, and you and your lords, your wives, and your concubines have drunk wine from them, and you have praised the gods of silver and gold, bronze and iron, wood and stone, which do not see or hear or know. And the God who holds your breath in his hand and owns all your ways, you have not glorified. The gods that you worship are deaf, dumb, and blind. They can't do anything. They don't do anything. They just sit there and just do nothing. The one that you are actually bringing an accusation against is the one, the God who has your breath in His hand. And notice that He also says, He owns all your ways. And that's the knowledge that God has of us. All in our past life has been known to God, that He has created us and that His eye has been upon us from the beginning of our existence. I don't know what your earliest recollection of a memory is as a child, but God has a bigger memory than you. I mean, I can take mine back to about maybe 2.5, 3 years old. I used to think that was a dream, but that's my earliest recollection. It might have been earlier than that, but I think it was about right. God knew us when we were in the womb. Isn't that marvelous to think about? Well, then with that, he says in verse 17, that's just, you know, David just sort of stopped for a moment. He thought, you know, wow, how precious also are your thoughts to me. I mean, this is a psalm of comfort. This is a psalm. All David has said is a ground of confidence and hope for the child of God that he is not alone. Nobody is alone. Ever are we alone. When we're by ourselves, we're not alone. And he doesn't look at this knowledge as invasive, but as a welcome blessing to consider that God is examining every particle of his life at an atomic level, if you will. And it's a wonderful thing. David is just like blown away. The fact that it doesn't matter where he has been, what he has done, what he has said, what he has thought, and where he has gone, and even when he was a little baby and when he grew up and all of this, that God has always been there. And the conclusion is too wonderful to even embrace fully. Because God knows everything about everything I do. God is everywhere. And I can never go where he's not already been. And that's too wonderful for David to comprehend. And God has every knowledge. God has knowledge of every part of my life since I was created. And he says, if I could write them all down, it'd be more than the number than the sand. It's just an incredible thought for him. And the reason that this is all wonderful is because of verse 5. You have hedged me behind and before. What that means is that in David's mind, what this knowledge of God, his omnipotence and his omniscience, what that did for David is it made him feel so secure. You remember security blankets? You know, I guess a lot of kids, we always had security blankets. I had one. Yeah. And don't be laughing. You had one too. Don't even go there. We all have our security. What did that make us feel like? Well, we just wanted to kind of cuddle up with our little blanket. Actually, mine was a pillow. I'm giving too much information, aren't I? Yes, I know. I should quiet down right here. There is a picture that you will never see. But anyway, it's a security blanket. And what David is saying is this whole thing about the knowledge of God. He has searched him. He knows everything about him. He knows everything he says he does and where he goes and all this. And to David, he says, you know, this is just, it just kind of wraps around me. But it's like, you have hedged me behind and before. And Moses understood that back in the book of Deuteronomy in chapter 33 of the presence. When Moses is giving his final blessing to the children of Israel, he is about to die. They have come to the land of Canaan finally, the second time. And Moses is giving his blessing upon Israel, and he says in that blessing, in verse 26, this recognition of this security blanket of God, there is no one like the God of Jeshurun, who rides the heavens to help you, and in his excellency on the clouds, the eternal God is your refuge, and underneath are the everlasting arms. He will thrust out the enemy from before you and will say, destroy. Then Israel shall dwell in safety, the fountain of Jacob alone in a land of grain and new wine. His heavens shall also drop dew. Happy are you, O Israel, who's like you? A people saved by the Lord, the shield of your help and the sword of your majesty. Your enemy shall submit to you and you shall tread down their high places. What David concluded here was the reality that everything about God's presence was a hedge about him. It made him feel secure. It made him feel protected. It made him feel that he's loved. And the truth remains that God created man, and in the spirit of man's habitation, the Creator knows everything there is to know about man, of what he thinks, of what he says, and what he does, and where he goes, and who he is. And that's a blessing. That's a wonderful and exciting thing, because God has all that knowledge. And so that's why David is looking at this, and he says, I can understand the presence of God in my life and how it is a hedge that is about me, and it protects me, and it makes me feel like that I'm never alone. And all the trials that I feel in life and all the troubles that I have in life and the things that I face in life, God is there. Because if God has known me this much, and if He understands every particle of my being, He knows what I need. I mean, it opens up the venue of seeing God as the provider and the protector, and to say that you are going to provide for me for all things, that no matter what I need. You remember the Sermon on the Mount when Jesus talks about that. Why do we worry about things? God is going to take care of us. Why not? Why is He going to do that? Because He knows all about us. And when you have that kind of knowledge, you can help and to give those things that are needed. I think it's only fair, though, that there is another side of this that needs to be addressed, because everything that we have considered is from the view of David, the righteous man, and he has a godly confidence in the knowledge that God has of him. But it also should at least give us pause to think that, well, now let's view this from the question of what does God really see in our lives? Because for David, who is a righteous man, a man after God's own heart, it was a blessing to think that, okay, this is a wonderful experience, that I know that God has all this about, knows us about me. But let's put that in the reality, though, and say that God sees our sitting down and our rising up. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? What does He see when He sees our life? He knows what my thoughts are. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? For David, it was a good thing. See, we can't hide our thoughts. We can't protect our thoughts. We can do some others, but not from Him. And He sees where I go. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? Oh, nobody else may know. And, you know, it may be a circumstance that, you know, outside and out of mind. That's actually an incorrect statement. It is impossible. Well, you can be out of your mind, but you cannot be out of sight of everything, because we are never, ever out of sight of God. And He listens to what I say. Is this acceptable, that He listens to the words that come out of my mouth? You know, it kind of fits into Galatians chapter 6 and verse 7. You remember when Paul talked about the things that we do in our life and how that we need to be careful about how we live. And he says this on a couple of occasions, but in here in verse 7, he says, do not be deceived. In other words, don't kid yourself. Oh, we kid ourselves. Well, God doesn't really know this. Do not be deceived. God is not mocked. Whatsoever a man sows, that he will also reap. For he who sows to his flesh will of the flesh reap corruption. But he who sows to the Spirit will of the Spirit reap everlasting life. And let us not grow weary while doing good, for in due season we shall reap if we do not lose heart. We shouldn't kid ourselves and think that God is not aware of our life. We can hide it from everybody else. We can hide it from the whole world. But we can never hide it from God. And that's the challenge. And this is when he comes back to the psalm, because as he gives this wonderful declaration of the knowledge of God, what he then does in a very bold statement, and we sort of skip down to verse 23, is when with all of this being done, now this is what David says in verse 23 to God. Search me. Are you ready for that? Am I ready for that? Search me, God. He is asking God to come and examine him and to look at him, and knowing that God has this kind of knowledge, that God has the knowledge of where I go. He knows what I think. He knows what I say. He is everywhere I am before I get there. He has known me since the womb. And with all of that knowledge, then you're going to invite God to come into your home and say, search me. How would you feel if somebody came into your home and they opened all the cabinets and the closets and the doors and the drawers and the whatever little nooks that you've got, and they examined every single thing that's in our house? Or they read all your texts or your Facebook postings or your Facebook pictures, or your tweets, or your emails, or your hashtag this, and I have no idea what that is, and the hashtag that, whatever that is. And they listen in on all of your phone conversations. What if somebody, and I'm not talking about the NSA. Sorry, guys, I didn't mean to leave you out in this thing, so they're probably listening into this now as we speak, but I'm not talking about that kind of a thing. If there was somebody who came in and opened all of your mail, read everything that you have, browsed your magazine subscriptions and examined all your books, or rewound all the television shows that you watched, or the movies that you enjoyed, or the music that you listened to. In other words, they came in and they examined every minute detail of your life. Everything. Would we be comfortable with that? Well, don't worry, that's not going to happen. Because it's already happened. It's already been done. We're concerned with the possibility that our society is going to degrade to a state of invasion of privacy by the government. Big Brother, you know. Or some other entity coming in. Folks, we've never had privacy. That's never existed in our life. Nada, none. We have never, ever had our privacy. And to think that, well, now just a minute, nobody knows about this. That's never been in existence. Since God created Adam and Eve, there's no such thing as privacy. Because God knows everything. And it doesn't matter whether the government or somebody else knows about all of our doings, because that's not going to be the judgment scene. But God, that's a different story. Because we remember what the Hebrew writer tells us in Hebrews chapter 4 and in verse 13. And clearly that this shows that everything about our life is born open. There is no creature hidden from His sight. But all things are naked and open to the eyes of Him in whom we must give an account. You know, the sad thing that people often have about life is that they think that they can do what they want, live like they want, get away with what they want. Nobody matters and nobody cares and nobody will find out. Wrong. Won't happen. Every single thing that I have done in my life since the day I was conceived in the womb, God knows every single thing. And that's a challenge. And what happens here with David is, I think, where we need to come with ourselves so that we can have the confidence. Again, Psalm 139 is not a negative psalm. It's not like, oh no. David is saying, what a wonderful blessing. I want God to come and just look at every part of my life. And he's willing to allow that to happen. And that's a bold assertion on his part. He welcomes the investigation. As in verse 23, search me, O God. Now, he's not a perfect man. But he tries very hard to please the Lord and follow his will. Lord, I'm doing the best I can. Search me, examine me, and see what's going on in my life. He then says, know my heart, O God. Now, Paul's the one that says that David is a man after God's own heart. That's who Samuel was looking for when Saul committed his sin, was that he was looking for somebody who would be after God's own heart, and Paul affirmed that later. And what David was doing was he was seeking to purify his heart before the Lord. He knew that there was always a challenge there, but he welcomed that investigation. He says to the Lord, God, search me. God, you come know my heart. And then he says, try me or test me. I mean, David is inviting, testing. Put me to the test. Try me, tax me. As a measure to see if I'm following the Lord's will, you look at my life, you dissect it, you know what's there, you test me and see if I'm doing what you want me to do. And then, search me, O God, know my heart, try me, and know my anxieties, or know what I'm thinking. The psalmist wants his thoughts exposed and seen by the Lord. He's asking. He's imploring God, do that. Well, he did so because of the confidence that he had in the knowledge that God was everywhere and that he would indeed find a man who was doing the best that he could do it, best he could do in the way that he could do. What a wonderful psalm that is. What will God find when he looks at my life? In 2 Chronicles chapter 16 in verse 9, that's on page 509. You know, when you get into those kind of books, you're thinking, okay, what page is that? 2 Chronicles 16 verse 9, Hananiah the seer. Asa was a good king. I mean, he tried. But he didn't do well with the Syrians, and he made a bad choice. And so Hananiah the seer came to him, and he makes this statement in verse 9. But the eyes of the Lord run to and fro throughout the whole earth to show himself strong on behalf of those whose heart is loyal to him. Wow. God not only knows everything, he's a runner. He runs to and fro from the earth. And he stops in Brooksville, Florida. And he stops at this house, and he stops at that house, and he stops at that house, and he stops at this house. And he's looking for those whose heart are loyal to him. And he's looking in Bulgaria. And he's looking in South Korea, Russia, South Africa, and Antarctica, if there's anybody down there. He's looking for those. And then Paul reminds Timothy in 2 Timothy chapter 2, and this is sort of a startling statement as well. You kind of wonder if maybe Paul was borrowing a little bit from Psalm 139 when he tells Timothy in 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 19. And this is one of these when you want to hear the hammer kind of come down, you know, boom, boom, here we go. Nevertheless, the solid foundation of God stands, having this seal: the Lord knows those who are his. The Lord knows those who are his. He knows who are his real loyal disciples. He knows that. And what he wants those people to do is he wants them to depart. If you name the name of Christ, he wants them to depart from iniquity. In other words, let's not kid God about who and what we are. If we're not a loyal follower of him, God knows that. If we're not going to be a faithful child of God, God knows that. Because that's what Psalm 139 is about, is that it's a wonderful thing that God says that I know those who are his. They have my name written on their forehead. And every part of my life is open before God. In the book of Revelation in chapter 20, you remember when John is bringing the book to a close and he talks about the great day and Satan's been cast out and Hades and all those other things. And in verse 12, John says that I saw the dead, small and great, standing before God, and books were opened. We all stand before God in judgment. And that's going to be the scene that's going to be impressed upon the minds of all of us, is that we're going to be looking for a book. These books are opened. And there was this one particular book that's called the Book of Life. And I saw the dead, small and great, standing before God, and books were open, and another book was open, which is the Book of Life. And the dead were judged according to their works by the things which were written in the books. Have you ever thought about how neat it would be to have somebody write a biography of your life? I did that once. It was 27 pages of blanks. Just kidding. I mean, boring, you know. But in fact, everyone in this room tonight, young or old, our life is inscribed in a book. And we're going to be judged by what's in that book. And what David is saying is, his life is an open book. Search me, O Lord. Know me. Try me. Test me. Know everything there is about my life. And may what you find be to your glory. That's the way David lived his life. You know, one of the things that I think that separated David from so many other men in his life is because he lived in that way. Lived with the knowledge of God's omniscience. He lived in the knowledge of God's omnipotence. But he lived in the knowledge that whatever he did was in the presence of God. And he wanted God to see that the best of his ability, everything he was doing was for his glory. And so that when God investigated his life, he would find that there was a righteous man who was doing all he could to live for his Lord. Did David make mistakes? Sure. Was he forgiven? Absolutely. Are we going to make mistakes? Absolutely. Are we forgiven? Sure. And so when we read Psalm 139, we need to think that it is a blessing to ask for God's blessing upon us, that in everything that we do, it is for his glory, and that we ask for him to search me, to try me. Lord, you look at my life. We're about to enter a new year. I've decided not to preach another sermon for the rest of this year. I'm done. We're at. We got a whole another year to go. We have closed the chapter almost on 1 year. And we can look at it as a positive thing about what we can do in our next year, of being able to live for the Lord and continue to have written in the book that God has inscribed our name, things that I do for his glory, knowing that he knows everything about me and that he protects me and he guides me. Show him your faith in him. Come to Jesus for the cleansing blood. Give your heart to the only salvation man can know. Live for the Lord each day because he knows everything about us. And God be thanked because of that. Consider these things. Let's stand as we sing.